You're listening to KC Forum with Kathy Quinn, public affairs with an entertaining spin.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to KC Forum right here on this radio station every single Sunday. Yeah, from 6:30 to 7 a.m., it is public affairs with an entertaining spin. This weekend, we have Taryn Humphrey, two-time Olympic medalist, talking about USA gymnastics, and she was released recently. We'll find out her spin on it. Also, the Veterans Community Project, find out all the good work they're doing for our veterans. First up, though, I'd like you to welcome Emily, a brave young lady who wants to talk about her incident that happened in a dressing room at a Forever 21 so she can warn and help others to be looking out for the warning signs. And so we wanted to bring her on. But first of all, we welcome you to the show. How are you, Emily?
Hi, I'm good. How are you?
I'm very well. Thank you so much.
Good.
And so earlier this week, I got to meet her, and we wanted to talk about the situation with what happened in the Forever 21 dressing room. And really, why you want to speak out, and I don't want to give your last name, is because you want to empower other young girls to be aware of their surroundings. Is that right?
Yes, definitely.
All right. So tell us what happened a year and a half ago or so.
So in October 2017, I was at Forever 21 Oak Park Mall trying on Halloween costumes with a few of my friends. My best friend were placed one dressing room apart, and Mr. Delap, who is the perp in this case, was placed in between us. He propped his phone up on a pair of jeans and slid it under the two-foot partition onto my side of the dressing room with the camera facing up.
Mm-hmm.
So after a series of events, they were able to trace him through the mall to a car, get the license plate, and they showed up on his doorstep. They brought him into custody and found over 150 photos of women in various states of undress. And so he initially denied everything, and then he did plead guilty. And in my case, he was awarded probation, which he violated within 24 hours in Johnson County. He's from Joplin, I forgot to mention.
Wow. Okay, so you're making it sound like it was, you know, there was a lot of work involved in from
right.
A, B, C, D. So when you were in the dressing room, your friend was there, and you thought, wait a minute, nobody's going to believe me.
Right. So I saw the phone, and it kept moving closer, and I just had the gut feeling that I was being watched. So I actually decided to snap a photo of it, and that was able to help investigators, like, really, I feel like that helped everyone to believe me.
Sure.
So he's a Joplin man traveling around the Midwest to do this. His name is Anthony Delap.
All right. And so you went to the manager of the store, and they said, we can't do anything for you.
Right. So I ended up calling Overland Park Police on my own, and they were of great help and were able to, again, like I said, through a series of events, find the man.
Mm-hmm.
I mentioned that he violated his probation. So that was actually with another 15-year-old girl, unfortunately, last week.
Oh, my gosh. Just within 24
yeah.
hours.
Right. In Johnson County.
What do we know about this guy?
He's a Joplin man. Some of the hotspots I know that he would travel to on the weekends are Kansas City, Springfield, Tulsa, and Omaha. So this was not like I'm doing this one time. It's like I'm going to go on the weekends and I'm going to find hotspots with preferably teen girls, Forever 21, Target, and I'm going to take pictures of them without their consent.
This was, in other words, when you were in court, you mentioned this to me earlier, when you were in court the first time and he gave his statement, you gave your victim impact statement as well. He said that, or they were trying to say that it was kind of an impulse thing.
Right. So he hired an expert witness to testify on his behalf that it is an impulse and that he has a very low rate of doing this again. Which obviously was not true. So
unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
So after he was convicted and he got his sentencing the first time, you didn't think anything of it till your dad called you, right?
Yeah. So I figured after he addressed the court, I knew that it wasn't true, like everything he was saying. One of his direct quotes was, "It is because of your courage that I will never do anything like this again." And I knew that he would do this again. If he's done it once, he's done it hundreds of times, and he's not going to stop. Probation isn't going to stop anything. And I was surprised it was the next day. I figured I'd give it a month.
Oh, my gosh, 24 hours. And imagine him taking it and saying, because of your courage, I'm going to, you know, stop this. And that, oh, my goodness. Okay,
right.
So how do you go into a store now? Do you look at stores in a way like, I want to look at their dressing rooms, or do you change in dressing rooms anymore?
Yeah, so if I'm going to try something on, I'm looking at the bottom partition specifically. A lot of them have gone down in recent years, just construction, remodeling, like it's not okay to have that.
Mm-hmm.
But in the most recent case, he actually went over the stall. So that's another thing to look out for. Like if the partitions aren't going all the way up, that's something to be aware of. If someone could reach over, possibly stand on a bench. So he went over the door is the thing. So having personnel in the dressing rooms, making sure that A, men and women are not next to each other if there aren't complete partitions, and also B, that there aren't creeps roaming the aisle with their phones going over the doors, you know?
Do you think that somebody may have seen him or may have before you saw him, or no? You don't think people are really watching out
before
for that?
Before my case?
Mm-hmm.
I think maybe people seeing the picture, maybe they think in hindsight, oh, this might have happened to me. But I doubt anyone really thought anything of it because I just had that gut feeling. And, you know, like, it's so common to just see a phone laying around. Like, it's no big deal to just see a phone. And I don't know. It was just the feeling. And I thought this wasn't right. And I did second guess myself, like, oh, maybe he just didn't have anywhere to set it down. But, no, he's creepy. And, like, you just can't second guess that. So everyone should be aware. Cell phones shouldn't be there.
Well, the thing is, that's the thing. You're second guessing yourself because it's such a fine line between, oh my God, am I going to accuse somebody wrongly that,
right,
you know, that's just trying clothes on and their phone fell on the floor. But you had that gut feeling too that helped you.
Right. Yeah.
Because
and just raising awareness, because if he's done this to 150 women and probably so many other people like him that are doing the exact same thing, I wouldn't be surprised if it's happened to someone I know or myself again, honestly, because the signs, like, it's not uncommon to see a phone, A, and also, as cameras get smaller, technology can be used for so much evil.
Absolutely. So, talking about the store, I'm not going to mention the name again, but talking about that store, were you disappointed in their reaction?
Definitely, yeah. It was very upsetting to hear that there's nothing I could do.
And you could have gone away and thought, okay, there's nothing I can do, but you didn't take that.
Right. I just knew, like, it was the gut feeling, and just having them tell me that was very upsetting. Like, I'm a 15-year-old girl, obviously scared, asking for help, and you're just not going to provide that.
15 years old, but you thought about it and you said, I'm going to take a picture of this phone. I mean, people, they have their cell phones with them all the time. If you're in a wreck, if there's somebody harassing you, whatever, use that phone, folks. I mean, you're using
right.
it for text messages and for everything else. And Emily, you did the right thing.
Thank you.
Gosh. Okay. So that's something you want to get across to people as well. You've got that cell phone, you've got it with you. I mean, use it to your advantage.
Right.
All right. So what we're talking about now is, you would like to let people know out there, girls your age, to be aware of your surroundings. Don't think that if you've got that gut feeling, and we all know what it feels like, you've been around a situation that's very, very uncomfortable, your stomach will tell you that there's something wrong.
Yeah.
And you felt that.
Yeah, I definitely did. And I don't get that often, and I think that was part of it. But for teenage girls especially, the stores that these people are targeting are the ones with the easy dressing rooms, obviously, but it's the stores that prominently teenage girls shop at. I've already mentioned the names. You know, it's swimsuit season, so maybe they're scouting out, waiting for someone to grab one and head back there, and then they know that they could be placed next to that girl and maybe snap a pic.
Did you feel, when you gave that victim impact statement, do you feel that you were able to get, well, obviously you didn't get through to him very well because he did it the next day,
right?
But I've often wondered with those statements, does it help you?
So actually in this case, it was a brokered deal. At the end of my victim impact statement, I concluded it with, "It is my hope that shock time in jail and registering as a sex offender will keep this man from doing this ever again." But it was a broker deal, and all of that was just kind of bluff. Like, the judge knew what it was going to be based on the rubric, which is something that we have to talk to our legislators to change. Like, obviously, probation is not going to keep these men from doing it again. And as technology advances, it should probably be a more severe punishment.
What do you think would help prevent something like this from happening?
I think it's the personnel and it's the dressing rooms. But then once it gets to the system, like, probation just is not going to do the trick. I think there needs to be something more. And, like, when someone commits a violent act with a firearm, they can't own one again. So, like, in Mr. DeLapp's case, he will no longer be allowed to have a cell phone. So, like, I think that is very, I think that can be very effective. Like, obviously, people can get other means of doing that. But, you know, like, you lose privileges when you mistreat things.
Now, did you tell me before that he was already a registered sex offender?
So, he had to, as a part of our broker deal on my case. So, okay, he went ahead and registered for 15 years at his home address and place of work.
Wow, how much good that did, huh?
Right.
All right, so, future, you sound like you're going to be a lawyer or a judge or something. You just, has this inspired you in a good way?
Yeah, so, like, growing up, my mom just always had Law & Order SVU on, and now seeing it, like, from the inside, actually working with the SVU, it's actually pretty cool. And I, like, the district attorney, Jason Covington, he sees so many sad things and just, like, children being abused sexually and other ways. And it's really sad. Like, there's a lot more to it than Law & Order shows. But it has been very cool to see from the inside.
All right, Emily, you've got the microphone right now. Tell the people out there, especially young girls and teenagers who think it won't happen to them. What's your advice?
Honestly, it might have already happened. So just know the signs. Look for the partitions. Become a dressing room judge. Like, what are you going to lose from taking the clothes home and then returning them if they don't fit? You know, it's not worth it to go through this whole experience. And call your legislators. You know, if you're upset about this like I am, definitely call up to Topeka, or if you live in Missouri, Jefferson City, and let them know how you feel, because it's not doing the trick.
You are marvelous. Thank you so very much. And I know folks have said, wow, what a bright, you know, little sensible lady you are. So thank you so very much. And we hope to hear from you soon. I know you're going to do great things.
Thank you so much.
All right, Emily. We'll talk to you soon. Stay with us. We got more on the way.
Hang on, there's more on the way with Kathy Quinn and KC Forum.
Come party across the Western Caribbean, up close and personal with Celtic rockers, the Elders. 8 days and 7 nights aboard the Liberty of the Seas, a Royal Caribbean ship. Special amenities included as the Elders' VIP guests aboard the Racing the Tide cruise. Departs from Galveston, Texas, October 13th. Cozumel, Grand Cayman, and Jamaica. The Elders, Racing the Tide cruise.
Eldersmusic.com is where you can find more information.
If you're just tuning in right now, we are going to talk about the Veterans Community Project. And if you haven't heard about it, just go down there by 89th and Troost, and you'll see exactly what I'm talking about. But I'm going to ask Josh to come here on the air with us right now, Josh Henges. He is the Director of Veteran Support Services, and we're very excited to have you on the radio show this morning.
Oh, excited to be here. Thank you so much.
You guys are so busy over there. Let's explain how the Veterans Community Project got started in the first place, Josh.
Absolutely. Well, it was born out of a frustration of a service that we knew could exist in Kansas City, and it wasn't there all the way. We had a deep desire to help all veterans, regardless of length of time in service, regardless of discharge status, regardless of all that. We were just trying to find ways to say yes.
What we're talking about is veterans who have been away from home. Many have seen, you know, battle. sometimes they come back, some of them, with PTSD. What is it that is the world not ready for them, or kind of explain?
That's a great question. It's really, a lot of it's about identity. When you join the military, regardless of the branch, your identity becomes whatever the military wants it to be. You have a task, a duty to do, and your entire life revolves around that duty. When you leave the service, you're coming back, and that duty isn't there for you. So a part of who you are is gone. And that is a tough transition for anyone. I mean, I know in the work I'm doing, if we lost that part of us, we truly would feel lost. And when they come back, that's the feeling they have.
Oh, my gosh. You put it really well. I mean, people understand that.
That type of emotion exists over and over again when they serve, especially when they're in a war zone. And when they come home, they lose that bond. They lose the pieces, that network of support that they've had. So not only do they lose that identity, they lose the people that they bonded with.
What are the services that the project is offering to the veterans?
We are known for our tiny houses. So when this thing got going, we wanted to find a solution that would really be unique, but be inventive and support who we know we want to serve in a unique way. So we got together and we thought, what is the best option? Well, we want to give these people a housing that is dignified, that is their own, that's something that they know is their own. It's not congregate. Mm-hmm. So the tiny house idea came from that. It also harkens back to barracks. So they call them bee huts, these little places that they lived when they were overseas or when they were with their unit.
Oh,
and the other thing is, it's really sensitive to trauma. So in group living, it's tough. There's wide open spaces. There's a lot of people who might not know. Well, these tiny houses give them a place to really feel safe and comfortable. The way we set the windows up, the way we set the doors up, it's all trauma sensitive. We want them to begin to unpack that trauma, and they don't need to live with that fear, that uncertainty. So that is the big thing, but we also have a bus pass program. Mm-hmm. Any vet in the city can come here, and we'll print them a bus pass. It lasts for 2 years. We do clothing and hygiene. We have case management. People who are having acute crises with housing, we'll help them navigate that, help them navigate the VA. Anything a vet might need, we probably can find a way to help. Some of the pushback we got was, well, on the land, couldn't you build an apartment and put 100 people? Well, yeah, we could, but we're really focused on that trauma piece. Trauma happens on the streets with homeless folks, but it's also happening with the vets, so it's this mix of trauma. Mm. And the symptoms are the same, and they come in, we call it survival mode, another term, survival-oriented behaviors. They're in their own mind, so when you're in survival mode, you don't behave normally, don't act as rationally as you know you could, because in your mind you're thinking, I need to survive. Mm-hmm. I need to look out for me. Well, these tiny houses provide moments for them to reflect on that, and before you know it, they're neighbors and neighbors and neighbors, and it becomes a community just like that.
Wow. How is it working out, and how long have you had the first occupants in those little tiny houses?
So the first occupants moved in January 27th of 2018.
Okay.
So we've had 13 or 15 successful transitions. We've got 23 more houses that'll be done in November. So we have 26 up right now, and 26 vets live in there. And then the last 23 will be done in November, and we will have a community center, an outreach center on site as well.
Wow. Josh, what are they saying? What are the guys and the gals saying to you, like, this saved my life? You guys, well, you all know you're veterans, and you know what they've gone through most of the time, and you know that, you know, placing the windows a certain way, and I think that's incredible.
Yeah, and that's you don't get it all the time, but it's those little moments you live for. It's really, really hard for them, and we know, like, we want them to hold that pride, and we want them to be proud of who they are, and they know that we think of them as veterans, but the big thing is they lost the identity of being a veteran, and they think of themselves as a homeless person. But the biggest thing is they remember again that they are a veteran. I think that's the biggest thing that we hear. It's the most important.
Wow. No one's ever talked. I've talked to lots of folks about veterans. No one's ever said that. And that does make sense now. They've lost that piece of the puzzle of how they feel whole. And that could, you know, be with anything in life, in anything you've gotten. But Man, okay, now I get it. That's wonderful. Okay, so how can people get involved? For instance, do they look on the website? Do they call you up or what?
Yeah, if they go to the website's the easiest way. That way we can, it's much easier to manage the traffic that comes through. On the website, there's a volunteer tab. Click that, and it'll walk you right through the process.
Perfect. Thank you so very much, Josh. And good luck with the project. And let us know things are going on in the future, okay?
Thank you so much.
All right. We got more on the way. Stay with us.
Hang on. There's more on the way with Kathy Quinn and KC Forum.
Joining me now here on KC Forum, we have Taryn Humphrey. And if that name rings a bell, folks, of course it does. Two-time Olympic medalist and many, many, many more awards, Taryn. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us.
Thank you for having me.
It doesn't seem like it was really that long ago. How does it feel to you?
It feels like so long ago. You know, every day it's hard to believe that it was, you know, over 10 years ago.
Ah, oh my gosh. What got you into gymnastics in the first place?
I was about 2.5 when my mom put me in gymnastics. Just, you know, I was a normal 2.5-year-old jumping on the cabinets. And and she finally just told my dad, she said, I got to get rid of her energy somehow. And so she said, gymnastics or ice skating? And my dad said, absolutely gymnastics. So that's how I started.
Now, why did he say that? Was he involved in it or had he been...
No, I think he wanted a sport that was kind of hardcore and had a lot of discipline, and you know, everyone knows gymnastics is both of those.
How has it been? I mean, it's been part of most of your life, really.
Yeah, it's been every bit of my life.
Except the few years you were a police officer. How did that happen?
Well, actually, and while I was a police officer, I actually coached once a week. And I was also the athlete representative at that time. So I've never lost control or, lost gymnastics.
You've been there. Your foot's been in the door the whole time. That is great.
Yes, the whole time.
All right, so 2004 Olympics, how did that feel being on, you know, an international stage, world stage?
Oh, yeah, no, the biggest stage. For a competition that only comes around 4 years at a time, it's so much bigger than, you know, the Super Bowl and everything like that, but it was such a dream come true to compete on one of the biggest stages in the world.
Did you ever even think of that? Was that your goal or?
You know, growing up, every little girl dreams about going to the Olympics, but in reality, only 5-6 girls every 4 years get to go. So I never really thought it was a possibility. My coach would always tell my mom and dad that, you know, she's going to go to the Olympics. And my mom and dad were kind of like, okay, we just want a college scholarship out of this. let's be real. When I was about 15, it kind of became clear that I was on the path to the Olympics. And I was keeping up with the top athletes in the nation. So it was a possibility.
Who are some of the most cool people that you've met along the way?
You know, just we met all kinds of basketball players. Yao Ming was probably one of my favorites because he was so tall and, you know, gymnast being so short. But we got to meet, you know, Andy Roddick and just a bunch of sports players and got to go on movie premiere events and meet Nicolas Cage and people like that.
All right. So let's fast forward to today. And okay. We were able to talk to you last week at Fox 4, and we were talking about the reason you were released from USA Gymnastics. So how are you today? Are you okay?
I'm doing good. It's a shame that Twitter is the way that it is because things are so blown out of proportion and so untrue. It's just a shame that people act the way that they do, and instead of asking me, they just make up their own assumptions. Actually, I'm doing great, and I can't wait for the future.
All right, so let's talk about USA Gymnastics' 10 years athlete representative during the time, now not under, but during the time of Dr. Nasser. Man, how was that?
It's always intense. The ranch is always intense. It has to be with the level of intensity of gymnastics. Mm-hmm. If you go around and you play around, injuries are going to happen. So it's very disciplined. And it was secluded because Marta and Bella and the USA Gymnastics wanted a purpose, and they wanted no outside distractions.
Okay. So you were friends with some of the people who were involved with the Dr. Nasser incidents?
I definitely knew, I know pretty much every coach at that level and every performance coordinators and everybody at that level.
All right, so apparently USA Gymnastics sent out a notice online on why you were released from there. So you were there 10 years. And it said for going against their goals and values. What was it? What did you do?
I actually posted a meme on Facebook about my own experience as an athlete. It said, I'll be the first to admit, growing up, I needed a butt chewing. And it was directed at nobody but myself. And it was basically about my own experience and how when I was an athlete, I was stubborn, I was lazy, and I will be the first to admit that I needed it, to stay focused and to stay healthy. It had nothing to do with bullying or violence or anything like that.
Okay, so why do you think then that they released you? Were you able to ask them, hey, what's up?
In my own opinion, I believe that I was a scapegoat. They were kind of looking for a reason to get rid of me because I was one of the very last employees for USA Gymnastics. And, I did cause a stir on the internet, and I think they weren't prepared for it. They don't want to have to fight it. And it's so much pressure from attorneys that instead of saying, this is her First Amendment right to post something like this, they gave into it and let me go. And, it is very sad because after 10 years, they're still using my ideas. They're still pursuing the Kansas City training site. They're still pursuing everything that I work for. But I don't align with the values and goals.
We're talking to Taryn Humphrey, two-time Olympic medalist. And so let me ask you then, where are you now? So we actually aired your interview. You've been in the paper. What's happening? Have they reacted? Have they responded to anything you've said?
No, I have not received anything from USA Gymnastics. I would say right now I'm completely open. I would like to see a new national governing body form, and I would like to maybe possibly on a personal level maybe be a cyberbullying advocate and all kinds of possibilities.
All right, so what we're talking about now is that Taryn was released from the USA Gymnastics and 10 years, and she doesn't believe that she was done fairly. So we'll just have to wait and see because they've had a lot of issues. Obviously, the Dr. Nasser problem, and then they have a lot of lawsuits against them because of the victims, and then also bankruptcy. So what's going to happen?
USA Gymnastics is a mess, and I would like to see a new national governing body, and I would like to see the athletes, and I would like to see the people who know the sport truly be in those positions to run it.
All right. So what can we do right now? This is your chance to speak out and say what you want. I know. And what's so cool about it, I didn't even mention this, Taryn's from St. Joe. So you're one of us here, and we're so proud of you, all the accomplishments you've had, and we hope, very soon that whatever you want to do happens. And what do you think that'll be?
Thank you.
What do you think that'll be, Taryn?
I'm not sure. My options are open right now. I want to do all kinds of stuff. I want to write a book. I'm not sure.
All right, very good. Keep in touch, would you please?
Yes, of course.
All right, very good. And if they want to find out, you've got a Facebook page. If they want to look and see what's going on with you, they can check those things
absolutely.
Out.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, good luck
absolutely.
To you. Good luck to you, and we'll
Thank
hear from you.
You
soon, okay?
Thank you.
Thank
All
you.
Right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you very much, Taryn. And thank you to all of my guests this weekend. That's it for us. I'm Kathy Quinn from Fox 4. I'd like to thank Andrina Byrne, associate producer. We've got Katie Connors, executive producer. We've got Doug Medlock, who does our voice. And, of course, Ed Walker helps us get this thing on the air. And the elders, of course. Remember, they're going on a cruise, guys and gals. So we had the commercial about it. If you want to know more, go to eldersmusic.com. It's going to be so much fun. I get to go. Yeah. Hey, it would make a great Father's Day gift, wouldn't it? To all you fathers out there, happy Father's Day. Until next weekend, see ya.
It's KC Forum with Kathy Quinn.